Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to Star Wars Minute. It's the daily podcast where we analyze, scrutinize, and celebrate the Star Wars movies 1 minute at a time. I'm Pete the Retailer from PeteTheRetailer.com.
I'm Alex Robinson from ComicBookAlex.com.
And I'm Joe Dater, and you can call me Ben Quarantineros. Oh, that's good stuff. Hello. How do you do?
Hello.
Glad to be back.
Yeah, thanks, Joe, for coming back. We were just saying in the green room, thanks for, you get the last minute of action and the credits, and it takes a special type of guest to handle the credits, and we're happy you could be here for it.
Well, thank you. I guess it takes someone who can read in English, and that's a flattering assessment of me. You looked at me and thought, I'll bet he can understand basic language.
Yeah, we checked your transcripts.
Written language.
Your permanent record.
And you had glasses, so we assumed you could read English.
All right.
All my life, people come up to me and go, you seem like a smart guy. And I get literally offended by that because I know they're just entirely basing it on the glasses. It's true.
Yeah. And your non-threatening demeanor.
Well, right. Thanks for inviting me back on the show. I'm hoping I can do this. I haven't spoken to another living human in about 45 days. So we'll see. I'm just going to ease back into it. We'll see how this works.
You've been having seances that you speak to the dead regularly.
I speak to the dead. The dead speak. I speak to inanimate objects. I speak to whatever, but no people yet.
Right.
So you're the first.
Well, hopefully you'll be up to the task of talking about minute 126 of Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. The minute 126 starts with Darth Vader and his crew just kind of walking out into space. And it ends with the credits for executive producers, John Knoll and Jason McGatlin. So let's start with the action first. This is an interesting, I feel like this is something that we haven't seen much of, if any of. It's just kind of walking out into, like, where does the Star Destroyer end and space begin?
Yeah.
Obsession, Calvin Klein.
He's standing there with his cape billowing in the wind. You know, that space wind.
The space wind.
So, well, I mean, it's funny. This goes back to, Pete, your objection to visible force fields.
Yes.
And so I think this is a situation where if we had a visible force field, it would have solved questions, these questions that you're answering. Because in the original Star Wars, the motion picture, we had Bay 327, which didn't have any kind of visible force field, and yet no one was being sucked out to space. So I'm assuming it's some kind of a similar thing in this scenario.
Right, but then the wind is what makes it. It does seem like they just did it as it would appear in atmosphere. You know, they're like, oh, look right, at, like, yeah. They looked at, like, you know, helicopter shots or something like that, you know, and I don't know. I'm not complaining too much about it. It's still, you know, it's a cool shot and I get it and I understand, and I would much rather have it be like that than a visible force field. You're right. But it is of note. I figured
it's sort of confusing.
Yes.
But like there's,
and I think also it's like the sound effects in space. Like if it's a decision between something being cool versus something being realistic, they tend to err on the side of being cool, which I think is the smart move to do.
Yes.
Because we could all be watching 2001 and watching spaceships flying at each other very slowly and shooting laser beams and Darth Vader standing with his cape perfectly not moving because he's, there's no oxygen, but what fun would that be?
Well, Star Wars seems to strike this balance, this great balance, which I'm probably going to bring up later as well, of things that seem realistic, but they're not. Of things that are grounded just enough that you go, oh, yes, that makes sense. That is perfectly reasonable. But in fact, they are completely fantastical. And it never goes too far into that other realm of like Flash Gordon, which is like, you know, total space fantasy. Nor does it go all the way back to something like 2001, where it's very, very, very serious and very grounded in science. And it's like right in the middle there.
Goldilocks zone, they call it. The golden rod zone.
Exactly. Right. It's the just right. It's the perfect porridge. Mm. I was thinking, what if Vader leapt after the ship? What if he was like, oh, no, you don't. And he just jumped and grabbed onto the back of it like the Terminator.
Well, or like Princess Leia in The Last Jedi. She should just jumped out and flown it after the ship.
Yeah, although it wasn't her choice, I'll say that. What if he just decided, yeah, I can do this, and did it?
But he's in a suit, too.
Yeah.
Well, is that sort of a nod to the original concept of Vader?
Oh, right, yeah.
Because he was supposed to have, at the beginning of Star Wars, boarded the Tantive IV by jumping onto it, from jumping through space and jumping onto it. And that was when they decided, well, if he can do that, he's going to have to wear some kind of an oxygen mask. And that was how basically Darth Vader's look was created.
Right.
So if he had been following the original concept, this could have been the moment when he jumps onto the outside of the ship.
Well, there you go. So he was. So I like this more now because it fits.
Yeah, if Star Wars had begun with him crawling on the outside of that ship and boring a hole through it somehow, then this could have been that moment right before that.
Right.
One question I did have is, it looks like the docking apparatus there is all like bashed up and smashed, and I don't understand why that is. Because the guy did the lever and it the Tantive, you know, he did the big satisfying switch, and so I don't understand why it's all wrecked.
I don't think it is. I don't think that's what it looks like.
But really? Because it looks, yeah. I don't know, from when I look at it, it looks like the metal's all twisted and like it's something broke off. And I didn't know if they were supposed to be implying that the ship...
doesn't look that way to me. No, it just looks like this weird metal claw that grabs onto the thing.
But I mean, when they show Darth Vader leaving, when they show Darth Vader standing there, doesn't the foreground look like it's all ripped and stuff?
No,
I think it's ripped like it's been working out.
Yeah,
no, not looking at it from him from behind, but looking at it when you're looking at him with a stormtrooper standing behind him.
No, that looks just like a claw to me.
Okay,
clean edges.
You know, it's dark, and it's this weird, scary, industrial crab thing.
It's Darth.
I think the brightness on my monitor might not be.
I think it's just you're frightened of it, Alex, and you need to confront that fear of a giant mechanical crab.
Go watch Wild Wild West.
To Attack the Clones.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. I love the conceit that the smaller ship is docked inside of the big ship. I think that's really cool.
Mm.
And it was one solution to the problem of, well, how do they get from there to there and get that ship out of there and, you know, logistically work it out so that the ship escapes from Darth Vader, you know, and there it is.
Well, I don't understand why Vader just stands there watching instead of saying, like, contacting the Devastator and saying, you know, lock a tractor beam on that ship. He just stands there like, oh, well, I guess they're getting away. Because there's a couple of minutes, like a minute before they jump to light speed, so.
He's caught off guard. Vader's caught off guard often in the saga, and for a moment is like, whoa, what do I do now?
Because he's not...
This is the last time I'll ever let a ship escape from my clutches.
Yeah, right.
He's not terribly competent. He's just riding on his kind of reputation as the Chosen One, so he didn't have to do stuff.
Or is he just super tired from having killed all those guys?
Well, there's that too. That's why he took it easy.
The muscle.
He took it easy the next time. He was like, you know what? I'm just going to let the troopers shoot up the whole place, and I'm just going to stroll comfortably through this white hallway.
Maybe I'll put my thumbs in my belt loops or something.
Yeah. I'm sure he probably I'm sure he probably thought for a moment of jumping after the ship and thought, "Oh hell no. No, not the way my legs feel."
Do you think when he's looking at it, do you think he's sensing Princess Leia on board, and that's why he's like, "Oh, I shouldn't go after that ship. I should let it go."
Did he sense her what you mean sensing her as in my
sensing
daughter
her presence.
Is on board?
Yeah.
Okay. Hmm. But he didn't sense that when she was standing right in front of him.
Oh, he did.
Did he?
He just wasn't sure. He just didn't want to say anything. He didn't kill her.
He wasn't sure.
Right.
He's definitely reprimanding her like a displeased father in that scene.
Yeah. weird if he got that vibe about some other girl that he didn't know.
Oh, he's pulling that line all the time.
Like, yeah, there she is, my daughter. And just slices her head off with a lightsaber. Hmm. Some random.
It's kind of surprising that he wouldn't see Leia and be like. It's surprising that he wouldn't see Leia and be like recognize that she looks like Padme at all.
Well, remember Marie. That's why, because the Leia thing is not Leia. Just happens to be somebody who's got a little bit of Force, background. She's got a little dose of midichlorians in her from somewhere in her family tree. But she's not really a Skywalker.
Hmm.
I'm bringing that back.
Yikes.
All right.
Because it doesn't, if you look, I think there's somewhere out there, there's still the real Luke's real sister. And I think just Leia had a little bit of, Force. And that's why Luke was just like, oh, I found this. Is this my sister? And they were all like, yeah, sure.
I applaud the, and obviously I love the Marie thing, but I feel like the it doesn't work in these current times, because if you say, oh, you know what, Princess Leia is not a real Skywalker, she's not a real Jedi, that seems like you're falling in with the wrong sort of crowd there.
I mean,
I know your intentions are not the same. But I can see that being picked up by someone who's like, yeah.
No, I think Leia's awesome, and I'll take the other. How many people we're not going to go down the other roads there, but yes, no, I think it's doubly so. I think it's Leia is awesome on her own, and she can be. I'm not saying she's less than because she's not really a Skywalker. She's you saw that she was not.
She's more than because she's not a Skywalker.
Exactly. And then there's also out there another an awesome character who is a Skywalker. The Lost Sister is still out there.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I brought that up, so I feel like that maybe that's an explanation.
Although the magnets does work perfectly with Last Jedi, so we'll definitely bust that one out again.
This is all covered in the sequel Sister Act.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. I didn't see it. I assume that's what it's about.
Well, Sister ACT.
Yes.
Right. Armored Sister cargo transporter.
Sister
AT-AT.
AT ACT, something like that. Or
that's our next shirt.
Oh. How do you feel about the Imperial March being played here?
I thought it wasn't the Imperial March.
It's a little bit of, it's not exactly, but it quotes it. It's sort of like it sounds like a knockoff, like a sound alike, just enough not to get sued. Bam, 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 ba ba boom.
And I'm jazzing. Bam, bam, ba ba boop, ba 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 ba.
Zoobity, boobity, boobity, boo. Hey, hey, hey. I've never really been on board with that. But only because I don't think it should be in this movie at all. I don't like that theme being in this movie.
Well, I like that it's not that it isn't the proper Imperial March. I'll give you credit for that.
But it quotes it. And it makes it clear, But then it doesn't go quite far enough. But I'm of the school that, the Imperial March didn't debut until The Empire Strikes Back. And it debuted in a very awesome way. And it debuted for a purpose, I think, because it's a different empire that you're seeing in Empire Strikes Back. It's Vader's empire now. And so things are a little bit different.
Hmm.
They're kind of like the empire is through effing around at this point, you know.
This is still the Tarkin era empire.
Right, exactly. And you still have that, you know, what's the Death Star theme for this Star Wars was. That was a good one. Or the Vader theme, the one that you hear briefly when he's in the Bacta tank in this film. That was the Vader theme in Star Wars, and I wish they should have stuck to that, you know.
Right. Although,
because this is the 1980 theme. This is not the 1977 theme.
Right. But it is, you know, that is, I see both sides of it. Because also, like that, you know, as I've said, you know, saying rational people shouldn't be watching these in internal chronology order. They would be watching them in release order, and therefore this wouldn't debut the Imperial March. You know, they would already, they would have heard it, you know, playing on the Muzak in Solo if they had watched it.
B, they would have heard it in the Attack of the Clones. So.
Oh, right.
But again, from a story standpoint, I still think that it scans, because I think, you know, once Tarkin is gone and Vader takes over, it's a new empire. And I think that I love that scene in Empire where you hear the theme for the first time, and it's that thing you see all the Star Destroyers, and then suddenly something massive casts a shadow over them, and it's Vader's Star Destroyer, and it's telling you something about the state of the Empire at this point. It's now run by Vader, and it's now a machine that is bent on revenge, and it's much more dangerous, and it has a whole new feel to it, and that music signals that. So even if it's, you know, movie release order, it's still in story order should go this way.
Right. I do love the idea of, like, in right before that, so in The Empire Strikes Back, like, they're gathering up to kind of, you know, go find the rebels, and you hear like a little bit of the like the old Imperial music, and then you cut to, you know, like Darth Vader, you know, shakes his head and like pops open the tape deck and throws that tape away and puts in his tape that says, like, you know, like Imperial Mix 1 or something like that, and puts it in and hits play, and that's when the Imperial March starts.
So who made it for him?
He made it in his egg, I'm assuming. He's just been doing some, you know, garage band and stuff.
Wow, I assumed he would farm that out. He's like Kim Jong-un, who'd like kidnap, you know, Dan Finnegan and make them write his own, you know, write his music for him.
Hmm. Wait, so it appears in Solo as diegetic music.
Right,
yeah.
Which is so odd to me. Well, it doesn't bother me because Solo is kind of a lark. I have a lot of fun with Solo and I really enjoy it. So it can get away with stuff. Yeah. And it's also very brief. And my thing, and this is going to come up a couple of times when I talk more about Rogue One, you can get away with anything if it's short.
Right.
If it's quick, you know. Mm. If you show me something and it's quick, it's like, okay, fine. I'm fine with it. Whatever. And so that,
like,
little thing,
joke.
That little thing in Solo is really fast, and it goes by, and I'm like, okay, I'll let it go. I'll forgive it. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. What sort of baffles me more about that is the film of TIE Fighters and stuff that's playing when you hear that music on the little screen that Han is looking at there. There's something weird about there being filmed media in Star Wars. That seems like a thing that they don't really have. You know, they got these holograms, but I don't see anybody watching TV and watching, you know, footage of something on a TV screen.
Attack of the Clones, they're in a bar and you see a lot of TV monitors.
Sports bar. But
yeah, I suppose so.
We'll come back to that's next year. Remember, we got 6 months. 6 months from now, we're going to start Solo. So, right? Yeah. No. Right. Yeah. No, this is Last Jedi is next. So, a year and a half from now, we'll start talking about that. Table that. Somebody put
You'll have to. You'll have to forgive us, listeners of the future. We are currently in a world where time has no meaning.
Right.
So this whole sequence was added later on, correct?
I know the Vader part was. I don't know if this was. I think when we talked to Chris Weiss, he had that this little bit, the ending part was here in some form or another, I think, early on, but I could be wrong.
I just brought it up because there's the shot of the Tantive IV flying away. And it seems more or less like there's no other ships around anymore. And I was wondering if that was because they were like, well, we didn't have the, you know, we weren't anticipating having to do a spaceship battle in the background, so let's just have the ship flying away by itself and not... Anyway, it would have been a nice little detail to have some, like, Imperial cleanup going on, because there would have been other ships stuck here, you know, that the Devastator intercepted. So, anyway, moving on. The good old Tantive IV.
Yes.
Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it?
And I have a quiz for you, which it's a trick quiz of kind of. So we see here the guy coming out, you know, the guy who just made it off the other ship. We see the nice, you know, the perfect little guys running down the hallway thing, and then we see the man in tan, which is Captain Antilles. And my question is, in movies, in film, or because it gets tricky, but how many actors have played a character named Antilles?
Oh boy. Just in the movies?
Just in the movies. Although there's a one of them has like an asterisk of sorts.
In any movie?
Well, in Star Wars movies, there you go.
Oh, okay.
So you're saying how many actors or how many characters have been?
How many actors have played a character last name Antilles in the Star Wars saga, just in the movies?
Oh, I think I know what the deleted scene. I think I know what the asterisk is.
Right, the asterisk is for a deleted scene. Who was?
Yeah. Okay, I'll say five.
Five, Joe. What do you think?
47.
Alex, you are closest without going over. By my count, it's seven.
Seven.
Because you've got Fake Wedge. Wedges. Yeah, you got Fake Wedge, Wedge's voice, and Dennis Lawson. Then you've got Peter Geddes, who played Captain Antilles in Star Wars, the motion picture.
Uh-huh.
You've got Rohan Nichol, who played Captain Antilles in Revenge of the Sith. And You've got Tim Beckman who plays him
here.
They
didn't get the same guy from Revenge of the Sith to play him here? That's a shame.
No, different guy. Because I guess they wanted somebody to closer match. It's not that far off, right? Closer match the age that we see him
it's
at.
It's a white guy wearing a helmet and a brown coat. It could be anyone.
Exactly. Yeah, I didn't even notice that this was Captain Antilles until. But then we've also got. The asterisk is Adrian Dunbar, who in Phantom Menace played Bail Organa, which was in a cut scene, and then that cut scene, the photos and stuff of him have now been retconned to be Bail Antilles, the senator.
Okay.
Who was nominated.
And as far as we know, they are not all related, correct?
Yeah, I don't think any of them are related. Or maybe they are. I don't know. It's like a common...
Except for the three wedges, of course.
The three wedges and the three Captain Antilles.
This is a really common name in Star Wars.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But interesting note about the Rohan Nichol, who played Captain Antilles in Revenge of the Sith. Speaking of them all being related... George Lucas picked Rohan Nichol to play Captain Antilles after Dennis Lawson turned it down. So he wanted Dennis Lawson, who had previously played Wedge Antilles, to come in and play Captain Antilles, what is it, 20 years before we see Captain Antilles? In a move just to, I think that was purely just like, you know what, like... I'm just going to mess with you guys. We're going to get, I think he does stuff just to troll people, just to troll the fans sometimes.
I'm sure of it. I think maybe sometimes entire films for that purpose alone.
Wait, so so let me get what you're postulating here is that George Lucas was filming Revenge of the Sith and said, let's get Dennis Lawson to play Captain Antilles because he played Wedge Antilles in Star Wars.
Yes. Well, and he was reaching out to a bunch of people who had who he had worked with in the original trilogy that hadn't, you know, like that's why the, you know, Jeremy Bullock has a cameo and one or two other people. And so he was just like, hey, Dennis, you want to come back and you can play Captain Antilles? Cause, and Dennis Lawson was still in that. No, thanks. I don't need more Star Wars. Thanks.
So Dennis Lawson doesn't want to mess with the fans by doing that.
I think Dennis Lawson wants to mess with the fans by not doing that.
I think Dennis Lawson does not want the fans. Is
yeah, there you go.
What it comes down to.
I wish they brought back one of the fake wedges to be the...
to play Captain Antilles. That would be... just to make it more confusing.
This is where I think...
use a fake champ.
See, and...
Do you know what a fake champ is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just checking.
From Evil Dead, right? The dummy they throw around.
No. The fake champ is not a dummy. The fake champ is a live person
who is
only shot
person.
From the back.
Yeah.
Who is when after Shemp died, they took some footage of him and stitched it together to make some more Three Stooges shorts. And there were a lot of shots of them talking to Shemp where you only see Shemp from the back. And it was another guy. And so anytime you see something like, you know, a person who's now deceased and you see the reverse angle of them, the back of the head is the fake Shemp.
Hmm.
All right.
Well,
it comes up. It comes up in Star Wars.
It comes up in this minute.
Very possibly, yeah. Does it, though? I don't know. What do you call that? Is that a fake Shemp? Is that the actress who stood in for Leia?
I guess that would be like a CGI Shemp.
Right. Yeah, also, fake Shemp is only used when someone is dead.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and she wasn't at this point. Right.
Right, exactly. Mm. That's a thing. People have forgotten that. I see the... a picture of Leia from this scene come up a lot when there are articles that say, like, is it ethical to recreate actors who have deceased? People forget that she was alive when this was done and died. Carrie Fisher passed away a few weeks after the film came out.
Right. I guess we'll get there too, but it's interesting that the one that was, people seem to have more issues with the person who was alive, the way they handled the person that was alive than they do with the person who was clearly dead. But
right. Yeah.
Seven Antilles by my count.
Have you ever wondered what's getting in the way of your happiness? What's preventing you from achieving your goals in life?
Well, let's face it. Life can be awful, and having to cope with depression, anxiety, or 1,000 other issues on top of it can be overwhelming.
Well, here's some good news for once. BetterHelp is here to help you better.
BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. Within 24 hours, you'll connect in safe, private, and convenient online environments.
Convenient is right. You'll be able to message with your BetterHelp counselor anytime and be ensured thoughtful, timely responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions.
BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches so they make it easy and free to change counselors if you need a better fit.
Talk to a licensed counselor in a wide range of specialties, including depression, sleep issues, anxiety, stress, relationship or family conflicts, or anything else that makes your chest feel tight and keeps you up at 4 a.m.
BetterHelp is not a crisis line, but anything you say is confidential.
Convenient, professional, and affordable. BetterHelp.
We appreciate that you listen to our podcast, and we want you to start living a happier life today. So as a Star Wars Minute listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/SWM.
Join over 800,000 people taking charge of their own mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/SWM. Red alert, red alert. 2 out of 3 guys will experience some form of male pattern baldness by the time they're 35. Terrifying, but fortunately, Keeps is here to save the day.
That's right. Prevention is the key, fellas. And the best way to prevent hair loss is to do something about it while you still have hair left. Keeps is the FDA-approved method to keep your hair right where it is.
That's right. After an online visit to a doctor, the Keeps formula will be discreetly delivered straight to your door every 3 months, keeping you away from the judgmental looks of that cute pharmacist.
That's right. Now, Keeps treatment can take up to 4 to 6 months or more to see results, so it's important that you act fast and keep at it.
That's right. Nearly 100,000 of your fellow men trust Keeps to be their hair loss prevention medication, and treatments start at just $10.
That's right. And for a limited time, you can get your first month of Keeps absolutely free.
That's right.
So if you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to keeps.com/SWM.
That's right. That's KEEPS.com/SWM. Keeps. Well, as long as we're talking about Leia, then I guess we'll, I don't think it's so much ethical as it just looks creepy. I mean, I guess the same thing everyone says about Tarkin that works for me flawlessly. To me, this seems like the Uncanny Valley-ish.
Right.
More so than the Tarkin part, but,
I've seen it so many times, I can't even objectively judge it anymore. It's well, the kind fact of that like, she's, that's it's, what she looks the, like the, now to me.
And the fact that it's quoting, like, literally just using dialogue, iconic dialogue from the original Star Wars, it just, it adds, to, it's not like you have, the other guy was lip-syncing Peter Cushing's dialogue. So that, I think, adds to the creepiness.
I guess, yeah. Although I love that that's her one thing that she says in that shot. It's the very last line in the film and hope, and then the next movie's A New Hope, and it just, it's perfect, you know, in a way. And it makes it such a great ending to this movie. And I, again, it was quick, and yeah, it was looked a little weird, but I remember the first time I saw the movie, it was the ending of this film is such an incredible thrill to suddenly see that white hallway again, and also to know what's what you're probably about to see if you see that white hallway. I just remember that so well from the first time I saw it. I always think of that, like that shot when they cut to the white hallway and the guy is running with the little CD and he's got to go in. And I think of it as the sequence. And then I'm watching it again for this and it's one shot. It's just one shot, really. It lasts about 10 seconds of he runs the hallway and it's a camera move. And then the camera swings around when he opens the door and you see Leia from the back. And then it cuts to the reverse angle, and it's just one shot, but it's all you need. It's perfect. It's enough, you know, and it's so, so exciting. There's a video online, maybe you guys have seen this, of a guy showing this to his girlfriend and filming her reaction to it. And she's in tears, and she's completely hysterical. And, like, the whole ending...
Scared?
Well, she's... yeah, because... she had no idea she was going to be watching a movie at all. He literally kidnapped her. She's not even his girlfriend. No, it's like she was just watching the movie and the Vader thing had her in hysterics. And then there's the ship and she's sort of pointing like, oh, that's the. And then they cut to the inside and she just goes crazy like, oh, my God, it's the. And then when the door opens and she sees Leia from behind, she's completely freaking out. And it's really fun to watch the vicariously her. Complete crazy reaction to that. And the first time I saw this movie, I loved it. And then every time since then, I feel like I want to do that to somebody. I want to make them watch it with me and see their reaction to it as well. It's kind of like, that's what this movie has in common with The Room, with Tommy Wiseau's The Room. The first time I saw it, I thoroughly was flabbergasted. And then every time since then, I want someone else to watch it with me and be flabbergasted.
I have not seen The Room, but so maybe we can do that.
I so want to watch it with you now. Yes, let's do a Zoom watch along thing.
Zoom room.
Yeah,
a room Zoom.
We'll Zoom the room. Yeah. We're Zooming the room, folks. That's it. it's a done deal.
Everybody out. We're Zooming the room.
We're Zooming the room. We can Zoom this room. If you're in the room at the time, you could be dead. So you got to get out of the room when they Zoom it. Go on.
No, I was going to say that like, there's an interesting, like, there is, if you didn't have this would be more startling maybe if you didn't have the Tarkin already. Like, you were like, all right, well, they already did that. You know that they already did CG work to include characters as they were. And so then once you see this, you're like, oh, wow, how are they, like, there's an inkling in the back of your head. Like, you're not, you know, going to be totally taken by surprise. There's an excitement in a sense. You're like, oh, are they going to do this? Like, are they going to do it? Are they going to do it? Like, you get that, you know, that behind the back walk up. And
what Alex said about it not looking good, I'm a little bit surprised by how not realistic it looks now when I go on YouTube and I see all these deep fake videos, because some of those look so uncannily good and I can't believe they couldn't make it a little bit better than it is, especially if they hired an actress and her name is going to come up later in the week.
Yeah.
They hired an actress to be the stand-in and then mapped the face over hers And they got someone of similar height, and it just seems like they could have gotten it a lot closer and a lot more realistic looking than it was. I was really surprised by it. There's this thing everyone's seen of this clip of Bill Hader doing Tom Cruise.
Oh yeah.
And the deep fakers, every time he goes into the Tom Cruise voice, they morph his face into Tom Cruise's face. And it's so uncannily good. The movements are completely and utterly realistic. And Bill Hader and Tom Cruise don't look alike. Their faces are totally different, but it's just, it looks perfect. You don't for a moment think that that's not Tom Cruise's face suddenly appearing in front of you. Yeah. And also the thing about that video that sort of bothers me though is people think Bill Hader is doing it, I think.
Hmm.
Because it gets shared a lot, and I see the comments, and people are like, my God, Bill Hader is the greatest impressionist alive. Like, you know, he's actually not doing this at all. He's not even doing a very good Tom Cruise voice. He's just, it's a trick. It's a computer trick.
Well, that I think they should have raised the level of difficulty. They're like, because we're all like, you know, if they started with a woman that they found who you know, is roughly similar looking and the same build and all that, and then made her look, yeah, you know, kind of close, but still something off. And we would have been like, oh. But if they showed us this and they were like, oh, and here's, you know, Princess Leia at the end, we're like, oh, like, and she's played by Shaquille O'Neal. We all have been like, oh, hey.
Whoa.
Wow. All right. Good work. Incredible. Like, you know, as long as you're not going to nail it anyway, just add that level. So you're like, oh, all right. Good work, guys.
Yeah. If you were in the credits and it said, you know, Princess Leia, Wilford Brimley, and you'd be like blown away by the work they must have had to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
My last note is that I feel like this would have been an appropriate minute. This would have been a much better minute for the droid cameo,
right?
Than having them cropped in the middle of the battle. Just having them in the background would have been cool. You know what I mean? And just not even talking or anything, that would have been a cool little Easter egg. I'll say it. It would have been a cool little Easter egg.
No. The place to put them would have been at the cut. So it cuts from the exterior of the ship blowing away, and then it cuts to the interior of the hallway. And the first thing you see are C-3PO and R2-D2, but they're walking away from the camera, and the camera moves past them.
Right,
I think that would have been a nice place for it.
Mm.
And they don't have any lines. They just don't say anything.
If anything, they should have had the other silver C-3PO saying lines.
Oh yeah,
like, we're going to be together forever, Creepio. Just you and me,
the three of us,
three amigos.
Yeah. What would it? What kind of a voice would it have had? He or she,
like an Edwin kind of.
I always go Edwin.
Okay. Oh, this is an adventure we're all on together. No matter what happens, at least we'll all be a threesome.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
It comes now.
How have we gotten this far without hearing you bust out an Ed Wynn impression? You're pretty good.
Because I've been working on my Keenan Wynn impression.
You try any Joe E. Brown impression, preversions
in there, and you'll have to answer to the Coca-Cola company. See, it doesn't work. I've just...
Speaking of things that don't work, I know it's a tough job, and they kind of, everything was coming together at the last minute and they were making changes, but the way that the music kind of swells at the end and the transition from that into the like did it credits, you know, kind of gallop, it doesn't quite work here. There's a couple of times that it doesn't work out of the 11 films, but I noticed it definitely this time that it seems like it wasn't, like, I wanted there to be more of like a swell build up into like a smooth transition into the like the gallop.
Here's a little something. When they show that shot of Antilles number 7 looking in on Princess Leia, and you see her from the behind, you see her from the back, and you see the cockpit of the Tantive IV. First of all, excited to see the cockpit of the Tantive IV. And but this shot is a nice little ring theory with the very first shots of the Phantom Menace when our Jedi negotiators are arriving at the blockade, and their ship is kind of like a proto Tantive IV type ship. And they have a similar shot where you're looking over the shoulder of Qui-Gon in the in the cabin of that ship. And I was really hoping that the cabins, like, that they looked at it and made it similar, but they do not seem to have any design features in common other than, like, having two seats facing forward in a window. But I thought that would have been a cool little, you know, especially since this is the last possible prequel we can have to Star Wars. It literally ends.
It's a nice, well, it's a nice book.
3 or 4 days before.
Yeah. The very first shot of the saga book ended with this, which is the very last shot of the saga.
Of the prequels era.
Right. That's what I meant to say.
So, yeah, all the stuff from before is its own little mirror, its own little ring, mm-hmm. a mini ring.
How excited are you? How excited are you to see this white hallway?
I love it. I think it's the most. I would say it might even be the most iconic Star Wars like set to me.
They've recreated it real good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty.
I guess it's literally the very first thing, the very first setting in Star Wars we saw was this. I think that's why it is burned so deeply in. And they never made a toy of it when we were kids, so that was always like, that always made it more like tantalizing.
What a great playset this would have been. What a great playset this would have been. Like a thing you open up and it's got, how great would that have been? And you never really, like if you're old enough, of course, you might have seen this even before you saw the movie. You might have seen publicity stills of you know, the set and wondered what was this all about, you know?
Yeah. Well, they didn't even make the Rebel Troopers until way later. So you would have had, like, if they made the playset, they would have just made it, you know, it was like, oh, hey, Darth Vader and some stormtroopers walk into a room and that's it.
Yeah, that's true.
They didn't take over completely with no resistance whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then you could have
Rebel Troopers, because that's the one they could have made. Like, people would have bought dozens of them to build up an army, you know, but they weren't thinking about that back then.
No.
Good God,
kids played with toys.
Yeah, and if you have those stormtroopers, the great thing is if you still have those, they're yellow now.
Yes,
that's the best part.
Which they need to introduce that into canon.
Happens to real stormtroopers too.
Yeah.
There should be yellow stormtroopers in the sequel era, because those are the ones that are left over from 30 years earlier.
Definitely in The Mandalorian, they should be yellow and have dogs chewed on them, magic markers and tape and stuff. All.
Yeah.
And like, I'd like to see it. Different parts are aged differently. So like their arms are still kind of white, but their chest and their head is yellowed.
I'd like to see an R2 unit with the front peeling off.
There you go.
Yeah.
And also, everyone has been bending their legs so much that they have to lean up against the walls, otherwise they'll just fall over.
They're all kind of bow-legged.
Right, yeah.
The legs,
fortunately, they have little pegs on the floor where you can occasionally stand up if you put your foot on one of those pegs.
Talk about the toys.
Well,
should stop that.
We also, then, we start the credits in this minute.
Yeah.
We get
the director credits.
Yeah. Director credit. Gareth Edwards, who I still am largely unfamiliar with, but I like this movie.
Godzilla
so
guy.
I like him.
I've only ever seen Godzilla, which I like a lot. Actually, I thought that was a good film when a lot of people were panning it at the time. It's like, well, it's really long, and then you don't really see Godzilla that much. But Bryan Cranston, yeah, you don't even see him that much. But I actually like the movie. I think it's really well done.
I feel like I should watch that now, because those seem like, you know, I like long movies where the characters, build up and stuff like that. Yeah. I like long movies with characters aren't not in it.
Yeah.
And I, you know, he's got some goodwill built up here. So.
Yeah. Speaking of goodwill. I've been looking up the thing I'm going to do this time around in the credits is I'm going to point out what project they did after Rogue One.
Oh, okay.
And in their field. And
not
Gareth
like
Edwards has not directed a movie since Rogue One.
What?
Wow.
4 years.
I wonder, did he get burnt out by the studio system? He was just like, I'm not doing that ever again. Or is he working on his own?
Or because the movie had problems where they like, he's not, he blew his shot at the big time.
Well, I'd like to see more from him.
I'd like to see more.
Suddenly.
Oh, that's surprising. Yeah, I'm surprised he hasn't done a movie. What other films did he do besides Godzilla?
Well, I guess that's part of the thing, is he did Godzilla, and then he did a movie called Monsters. Mm-hmm. And that was it for movies.
Godzilla?
Monsters was before Godzilla, 2010. Okay. And that's it. Other things, directed those three movies and then some TV episodes. Three TV episodes he did.
I'm surprised by that. As long as we're talking about the director, I think this is a fantastic movie. So I'm shocked that he hasn't done more. Or maybe he's been very much in demand, is just waiting for the right thing, and you know, feels no need to crank it out.
Maybe. Hopefully. Anyway, there you go. Gareth Edwards.
I'd like to point out that I think he did a great job.
Yes. Yes. Agreed.
Yes. And I think
the movie turned
you
out
guys okay. are doing a great job.
Oh,
thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
We have not made a movie since 2010, unfortunately. Yeah.
Nor before that.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. It's worth mentioning. You've not made a movie since 2010 and had not made a movie prior to that either.
I think that shows you that Hollywood is things were difficult to work with.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's why we're blacklisted even before we started doing anything.
Yeah.
Well, you're the bad boys of Hollywood. Which is, say that you're terrible.
Oh, I thought you were like Pete and Alex's wardrobe by Bad Boys of Hollywood.
Speaking of goodwill.
Screenplay by Chris Weitz and Tony Gilroy. Chris Weitz, former guest of the show. Look at that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was really interesting to get his insights into the writing process and the story process of the film, and to find out what stuff sort of didn't make the cut and what stuff did make the cut.
Yeah, and he's also done he and Gary Whitta have kind of opened up and done a lot of stuff about this. I don't know if something, you know, did some kind of NDA expire or something, or they don't care. They've been talking a lot about it in the past year or so, which is great. So there's really interesting to get the behind-the-scenes info from them. And Tony Gilroy is kind of the fixer, from what I understand, brought in to make it... Yeah. Which I don't know. I don't know anything about that.
Okay. Well, I mean, is it like on a technical level? Like, you know, something is... like if a pencil breaks, he has to go sharpen it.
No, it could be. Yeah. I don't know. I think not knowing anything about the studio politics and whatever else, it seems like from what I remember hearing, that was like he was brought in kind of near the end to make it to help kind of chop it up and make it more palatable for Hollywood. Or am I getting that wrong? Or was he... No?
I don't know.
All right.
I'm reading his stats. He's mostly a screenwriter.
Yes. He's an American screenwriter.
There you go.
But yeah, I think he's you know, not that he's got a magic touch, but he's a known... You know, it's almost like bringing Ron Howard in to finish Solo. It's like, all right, well, we need known quantity to kind of, you know, put a little polish on this. And then, so screenplay by Chris and then Tony Gilroy, and story by John Knoll and Gary Whitta. So Gary Whitta, who, you know, kind of wrote the early drafts, he was the first one to kind of come in and set up the story with John Knoll. And John Knoll, I feel like we've talked about a couple of times, because he's also going to show up, spoilers, he'll show up at the end of this minute as executive producer, John Knoll. And John Knoll is one of those guys who's like, I like his life.
Special effects guy.
Yeah, like he started out, you know, doing effects work. He worked on the original trilogy. And then when those were over, he you know, parlayed that. You know, he was always a nerd into stuff, and he and his brother wrote Photoshop. And then, you know, just kind of kept doing effects work and you know, all related, you know, graphic stuff. And then, just, you know, one day hanging out, and he was like, oh, you know what would make a good movie? And then pitched Rogue One, which then turned into this. And that's the kind of life I want to lead, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like an easy sell. to go into Kathleen Kennedy's office and say, so I hear you're looking for more Star Wars movies to make. How about we basically make the story of how Princess Leia gets the plans at the beginning of the movie?
Right.
I can't imagine Kathleen Kennedy not saying, yes, absolutely, say no more.
Right.
Can't imagine her saying, wait a minute. I'm not sure. It seems like a no-brainer.
I guess to me, I mean, maybe I'm just cynical, but it seems to me like they must get 20,000 pitches. It's less has less to do with what they think is a good story and more to do with who they want to work with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, seems like that
story is their primary thing. They're like, huh, this guy has a good track record. This, you know, these people are good to work with. These people have proven box office appeal. Let's get these people together for a movie and then figure out what it is, more so than it is like.
I think we all know in the cutthroat world of Hollywood, it's all about who you know, whose palm you can grease.
Right. Mm-hmm. Grease is the word.
Yeah.
What I
heard.
And then, so then we end with, well, based on characters created by George Lucas. I don't know who that is, but.
Ah, the credit I've been waiting for. Well, have I got news for you.
Oh.
If you want to know who George Lucas is, I've got some biographical information about Mr. Lucas.
Oh.
Yes. One moment. George Lucas.
Not directed a movie in 15 years.
George Lucas. He directed a movie? Here we go. Born George Alistair Lucas in 1907 in Craterville, Michigan, he was the youngest of 14 children and was forced to work in a steel refinery when he was 9 years old. By the time he was 12, he'd discovered a love of galvanized rubber products and had wanted to become a galosh salesman, but his father forbade it. In 1924, he enrolled in Maryland State College, where he tried out for the football team and became its youngest shortstop ever. But his athletic career was cut short by the outbreak of World War II. While in France fighting the Irish, he discovered his true passion in life, ornithological dentistry, and he devoted his life to being the top bird dentist in the Quad Cities area. Unfortunately, the early 70s saw a sharp drop in his business due to an effective series of public service announcements urging birds to take better care of their teeth and gums. So he packed his bags and drove his wife and 11 children to Hollywood, California, where the rest is history.
Hmm.
And there you have it. George Lucas.
What's the source for this?
It's Daterpedia, which is the online dictionary read only by me.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
We'll have to follow his career very closely.
Oh, yes. I'd also like to point out that the music being played under these credits is the Star Wars music.
Hmm. Okay. Doesn't sound like living in these Star Wars. I mean, it does sound a little bit, but not quite.
It's just sort of it's not the hit version of it. It's not the single.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
the B side.
One last credit I wanted to note is the executive producers, once again, John Knoll and Jason McGatlin, whose name I was like, I've heard that before. And he's the senior vice president of physical production at Lucasfilm, which is an interesting note. Physical production, which is, I guess, his way of saying that he's not just the guy that, you know, moves papers around and puts his name, stamps his name on stuff. He's actually in charge of that. You know, like, all right, let's actually get the guys out there. And he's got a decent long career in production. And the one that I wanted to note, fans of ours going back a ways will understand that why I want to note that he's the production office supervisor from Deep Blue Sea.
Oh.
There you go.
I just like
doing Deep Blue Sea Minute yet?
Well, we did. Well, just one, though.
We did.
I mean, we didn't do it.
He did a great job.
On Deep Blue Sea? Or
he
here?
Did a great job. Okay. Here and on Deep Blue Sea.
Or completely unrelated to any
job,
of that.
And he's doing a great job.
His productions were very physical.
Yeah. I guess that means, like, the producer does stuff like secures the stage space for the duration of the shoot and stuff like that, or hires the helicopter and all those things. Things you take for granted and don't think about.
Exactly.
Yeah. Somebody has to make those phone calls, and it's boring. It's not glamorous, but somebody's got to do it. They've got to call. They've got to figure out which caterer is best. Don't hire the lousy caterer. Hire the good one.
And
somebody's got to do that. And no, you know, Darth Vader's not doing it.
He's not hiring caterers. He might.
No.
All this catering talk is making me hungry. So I'm going to say that's all I had for 126. Joe, can you come back tomorrow to do more credits? There's a whole bunch of names floating in blue space coming up.
Oh, that's names are my passion. That's one of the reasons I wanted to become a dry cleaner was all the writing down of names. That was really the part of it that I was very excited about.
And Alex, can you come back tomorrow?
Can I say a tentative yes?
Okay. Well, if not, Joe and I will just read names without you. It'll be okay.
Take a roll.
And I'm going to write them down.
In blue, hopefully. In blue, in space. And we'll be here in blue, in space tomorrow for a brand new episode of Star Wars Minute.
Star Wars Minute.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.